Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are here with me today. Oh, we've got a wonderful, wonderful show in store for you with another great guest. Of course, you know I say that all the time, but they are. I really have been getting such great guests lately. I'm amazed over the last several months of how many great people have graced me in my studio and have been on the show and the call-in. So anyway, let's get started. I know all week long you've been anxiously awaiting your quotes of the day. Let's see what the universe and Abraham have in store for us today. From the universe. Once you make up your mind and start something, once you commit to it and say yes, and never look back, do you have any doubt that I won't rush to your side? That legions won't be summoned? That players won't be drawn to help, assist, and fall in love? That connections won't be made? Circumstances won't be crafted? Dots won't be connected? That the course of history won't be irrevocably changed? Good. I didn't think so. I'd say you're ready. The universe. Ah, we love our quotes from Mike Dooley and the universe. Always such fun and very encouraging. One of the reasons why I love to read his quotes at the beginning of every show, because they are extremely, extremely encouraging and always so apropos for whoever our guest happens to be that day. And let's see what Abraham has to say today. Huh, this looks like an interesting quote. From Abraham, gender identity is inconsequential from an energy standpoint. In other words, when we view anything that is physical, we see the energy of it, and we note that the energy of what you call male and female is equal in all things. Abraham. So a very interesting quote. I don't even think I've ever seen this quote before, talking about sort of the difference between male and female in terms of energy, but I really think it's a larger point being made here that, you know, there are so many things that we tend to think of as so important as, you know, this is this way and this is that way. And we tend to sometimes forget that the energy of what makes up all these different archetypes, of all these different attitudes, of all these different things actually exist in everything. Some things might have a little bit more of an active energy or more of a passive energy or more of a confrontational energy or more of a peaceful energy, but that doesn't mean that anything is 100% peaceful or 100% confrontational, that everything is made up of a balance of all of these energies. Yes, when we see things in front of us in the physical form, you know, we tend to look at them and say, oh, you know, that person is an aggressive person or that woman is a very soft woman. And so we just see sort of what's immediately in front of us. But we tend to forget that, you know, underneath the surface, there's a lot more going on. And this is something that I think as we become more mindful, as we become more sensitive, more aware of really the depth of what's happening around us, that we begin to see that, you know, nothing is truly purely black or white. That really it's on a whole scale, a whole continuum of the rainbow that goes from infrared to ultraviolet, everything in between, and goes way even beyond that because of the frequencies that we cannot even perceive physically. So I think this is an important point to keep in mind, to not just judge things in front of you as black or white, but remember that they're really made up of all different components that leave them somewhere along the continuum. So remember to just move forward and trust, because that's also, as Mike Dooley in The Universe says, when you believe, that you line up, you make that choice, you line up your energy, mountains move, seas part, and all kinds of things happen to help support in your endeavors. So again, I think these two quotes are just very important to keep in mind of the energy that we bring to things and the energy that exists in the world around us. And it's so funny to me, because years ago, if I talked like this, people would like cross their eyes and think I was nuts. And nowadays, this is becoming much more mainstream. So hope you enjoyed your quotes of the day. We'll have more for you next week. It is now my pleasure to introduce you to Barb Schmidt, who is an international speaker, a philanthropist, a spiritual mentor, and the best-selling author of the book, The Practice. She's devoted more than 30 years to her studies with such inspirational leaders as Deepak Chopra, Thich Nhat Hanh, Scott Peck, Buddhist nun Tenzin Palmo, Thomas Merton scholar James Finley, and Marianne Williamson. And we are very, very glad that she took some time out of her busy schedule while she happened to be up from her home in Florida and New York City to come into studio today. So welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Barb.
Thank you. It's such an honor to be here. I'm thrilled.
Oh, wonderful. It's great to have you here. Wow, you really studied under some great people. I've had a couple of different Buddhist nuns on here, and another Tenzin, but not Tenzin Palmo. I'm not familiar with Tenzin Palmo.
Yeah, she's I love her to death. She's a Western. She's from London.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and she went over to India and started studying when she was a teenager.
Oh,
and
wow.
She's the one, her book, the biography written about her, Cave in the Snow, she's the one who actually lived in a cave for 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
She's the most real human being, I think, I say this about all of them, just like you say about our guests.
Yeah.
She's just amazing, because here's a woman who's deeply spiritual, lived in a cave for 15 years, but you sit and talk to her, sit and be with her, she is so normal, and she is so relevant, and can speak to everything that we experience and that we talk about. So
wow,
I just love her.
Wow. I was looking back over my archives, and I realized a couple of years ago, probably 2012 or 2013, I had on a Buddhist nun who was a follower of Geshe Michael Roach, and she had, after I had interviewed her, she was going on a 3-year, 3-month, 3-day silent retreat in some like hills in the Arizona desert or something, and had raised the money to do it. And I imagine she's probably done by now. Well, maybe not. Maybe another few months or so, but I have to get her back on when she comes back. So I'm curious, Barb, international speaker, philanthropist, spiritual mentor. Is this like when you were a little girl and you said to your mommy, "Hey, mommy, when I grow up, I like want to write a book and like be a spiritual inspiration for people around the world"?
No, I love that. But it ties so beautifully with your quote today.
Yes.
When you make it a decision, when you get in alignment with what it is you want to do with your life, you move mountains.
Right.
So no, but absolutely. I always had this desire that I wanted to matter, and I wanted to make my life count, and I really wanted to give back. No, I grew up in an alcoholic home and had a really difficult childhood.
Chicago area.
In the Chicago area, yes. So it was really hard. I'm the oldest of five, and it was difficult, but I had this little piece of me. I'd watch TV or see all these things. We were poor. There were five of us, and I'd think, I'm going to make it someday. So I did. I started working for McDonald's when I was in high school.
Really?
And ended up owning my own restaurants before the age of 21. I did make it.
Wow. So you were really motivated.
I was incredibly motivated. But in a way, trying to make myself count and matter, like I said, I was so determined.
And it's so interesting, because so many people can come from that kind of background, and in some ways it can beat them down.
Yeah.
They feel like the world's against them. And then other people, not just yourself, but many people I've talked to, or can serve as a motivation to say, you know what, I'm going to matter. I'm going to do something with my life. I see where I come from, and I want to change this.
Yeah, and I think what happened for me was that. I saw everything around me, that money and things and houses and all the external things is what I needed to matter. That's what was lacking in my life. I just needed to have all that. So I went after it and got it and still was unhappy and still was miserable. And so I had everything, you know, that society says we need to have money, all this stuff. But ultimately, I was really incredibly unhappy and miserable, even though I had all of these things, and started suffering from an eating disorder, a bulimia.
Oh, really?
Yes. So that was my way of, you know, bulimia is such a insidious disease. It disconnects you from yourself because you don't want to be with yourself.
It
helps you understand, okay, just keep going externally and you're a perfectionist and wanting all these things. But eventually then it takes its toll. And I woke up one morning and said, I can't live this way anymore. And went into treatment. Yeah.
And at what point, was it during treatment or was it afterwards that you felt like there was some kind of switch that kind of put you onto your spiritual path?
Yeah, this was 1984.
Oh, wow.
So Karen Carpenter, of the Carpenters, dating myself, had just passed away in 83 of anorexia, bulimia.
Yes.
So when this voice within said, go get help, I checked myself into treatment.
Right.
And I think it was a combination. Once I got there, 84, no cell phones.
Yes.
There were no televisions, nothing in the room.
Right.
So I was by myself. So between therapy, learning how to meditate, mindfulness walks, yoga, you know, 6 weeks of spending time with me and really getting it all out. It
really? You started doing yoga in 84?
84.
Wow. That makes you like a real forerunner. It's like nobody even knew what yoga was in 1984.
No.
I remember those days.
So I think you know, a bulimia, but I know all disease, all addictions, all of us, whether we have one or not, this this society today of rush, 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 go, 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 we're disconnected from ourselves. So
absolutely.
6 weeks in treatment got me really connected to me.
Gotcha. And you even learned to meditate then.
Yeah, learned how
to meditate. Was it like TM or just regular meditation?
Actually, breath.
Oh, breath
work. It was breath work.
Oh,
it was breath work. And because
wonderful.
It was so, you know, it's brutal and it's disconcerting to sit with yourself and sit with your thoughts.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
So to be in that kind of an environment doing that together, it was transformational. And certainly is my passion of helping people start to get connected with themselves
before
we connect with the world.
When you left treatment and went back to your regular life, was it difficult to kind of, after now kind of having experienced this stuff and wanting to make that shift and change, to now go back into your regular day-to-day life?
Yes, but I think it ties into your quote today.
Yeah.
Once you make the decision. So when I got into my regular life, it's like, oh my gosh, now what?
Yeah.
And I had made the decision that this was what I was going to do. And I had to strengthen and deepen that, the 11th step of VEHE, sought through prayer and meditation to deepen, you know, my conscious contact. So it's when I started studying with all the masters and the teachers and went on retreats and carved out time in my life to put my practice as a priority. And so everything else really blossomed after
that.
Right.
So you really said, look, this is important to me. And like, I need to find the time. I need to schedule the time and not just let life dictate when I can do things.
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful. Okay, great. Well, we'll talk a little bit more. We're going to take a quick break, but I want to get in a little bit more of what happened to you while you were studying with all these masters and what brought you to the point where you actually decided to write a book about it and actually started to teach this stuff, okay?
Yeah, I love it.
Wonderful. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you on a path of consciousness or spirit? Is personal or spiritual empowerment important to you? I'm Sam Leibowitz, your conscious consultant. and I am here to answer your questions and bring you experts in all areas of life to raise your awareness and support you in your evolution. Tune in at my new time, Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern on www.talkradio.nyc. That's Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
TalkingAlternative.com.
And welcome back. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and my guest this hour is Barb Schmidt, author of The Practice. So, Barb, before we went to break, we were talking a little bit about your background and, you know, coming from not necessarily the best environment and still, even once you made it sort of materially successful, still inside there was something eating away at you and this bulimia issue, and checked yourself in and really decided to heal from that, and that kind of started you on your path. So I'm curious, as you were studying with these different men, who was the first person you went to study with? I'm
Scott
curious.
Peck, oh, The Scott Road Peck. Less Traveled.
Ah, yes.
Somebody gave me that book when I got out of treatment, and that first sentence, life is difficult.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, and he's going to teach me how to fix that.
Right.
Yeah, Scott Peck.
Wow, okay, wonderful. And so as you started, like, studying under all these different masters, and you really, like, in the 80s and, you know, late 80s, early 90s, start doing this is when not a lot of people were doing it. Did you find that it was more challenging than you thought it would be? Or, you know, were you expecting it to be different than what it actually was?
No, actually the opposite. Every time I went on a retreat or went to hear a lecture or workshop, it just empowered me and nourished me even more, because as I started to practice and as I started every day to sit down with myself and practice, that's what happens. As you said in that quote, it just starts to move mountains. It starts to unfold in life. So I would come back more energized. I think the biggest challenge always was, how does your inner world and your outer world come together? How do you live, you know, for a couple of weeks on a retreat? Then how do you come back into the world?
Back, so
that was always, it was always my deep desire. How do I get those two merging in sync with each other?
Did you find, like, your friends and your family were not always so supportive of this transformation that you were undergoing?
And that I was a little weird.
Yeah.
That's why I love 2015 and this generation now. It's so mainstream now. We're not weird anymore.
Right.
Yes, they were skeptical. I think seeing me in recovery, though, they were grateful for that. But they weren't quite sure of this way that I was going about it.
All this other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it took a while for people to kind of get it. And then just let me be as I let them be. I didn't come into my life and try to change them either. I didn't try to say, hey, look what I found.
Okay.
You guys have to find this too. I just went about, I like to call it quietly changing the world. So I just went about changing myself and supporting myself. And when you allow others to be, they let you be.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's one of the biggest teachings that I always try to impart with people is, like, you cannot change another soul. You can change yourself. And by changing ourselves, we can inspire other people, but we can't change anybody else for themselves. Did you find that maybe some friends who had been good friends before kind of exited your life, and then other different kinds of people started entering your life as you started to shift internally?
Yes, definitely. And ultimately, I ended up getting divorced from my first husband. We owned the McDonald's together.
Right.
Very amicable. Just we had grown apart. And but absolutely, when you start kind of stepping into your own life, because I really hadn't stepped into who I was.
Right.
When you start doing that, you start recognizing what it is that you want, you know, how you want to live. And you do this in a very conscious, kind, loving way. So things just kind of evolve and people go their separate ways in a nice way. It's got a rhythm about it. Sometimes it's not as easy in the moment.
Right.
But as I look back on it, you know, things do happen the way they're supposed to. I do absolutely believe in that. And trusting that everything happens in the universe. God has your back, really. Yeah. And that as things evolve, you are going to be able to make the decisions that you need to make. And so are the people around you. So it absolutely changes.
And it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. You know, sometimes we get a little impatient and we forget that, you know, there's a rhythm to life. You know, there are four seasons and that it can take, you know, a few seasons for things to really shift and change. Because once you plant the seeds, they don't sprout right away, right? It takes a little, you know, nurturing, a little watering, and slowly but surely they come up. So we especially in Western society, we tend to be in such a rush for things to change.
Well, I think that's why it's a practice. And also for me, that whole quote, it's not the destination, it's the journey.
The journey
takes on a new meaning because
it
that truly is true.
Yes.
It's not really where you're going. It's the whole moment to moment, minute by minute.
Yeah.
So you really get that. So you can settle into it.
Exactly. Yeah. And get comfortable with it. And you know, when you're used to not feeling safe, it takes a while of feeling safe, of being safe, before you truly feel safe inside and out.
Totally. That's beautifully said.
At what point did you decide to transition from not only being a student, but to also be a teacher?
So I ultimately got remarried in 1993, actually, and moved to Boca Raton, Florida. I was living in another city in Florida, and my husband was affiliated with Florida Atlantic University there in Boca. And as I started doing this work, I really was in a mode of, I ended up studying all the great traditions and teachers and religions, and that's kind of who I am.
Right.
I went, they had a peace studies program at this university. So I went over there and I said, tell me about peace studies that you're doing. I'd like to be involved. And they said, well, and they started telling me all of the conflict resolution and outer peace things. And I looked at the dean at the time and I said, what do you do for inner peace?
Mm. So
we don't really have anything for inner peace.
Oh, interesting.
So that was 2001. So that I said, well, this is what I do. This is my practice. I would love to maybe talk with you about doing some kind of a community outreach program.
Right.
Just started from there.
Wow.
That idea for me that outer peace begins with inner peace.
Inner peace. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So through workshops and lectures and the community, and it just spread and spread, and people would say, would you please write a book? Could you have anything to give us? You
know,
get up and give my talks, but I didn't have anything to give them.
Okay.
So as you said earlier, it's kind of a natural, organic unfolding.
Right,
I don't ever think that I thought I was going to be writing a book. But it was the natural next step.
Got you. And when you started to teach and share and do workshops and seminars and stuff, was there anything about that like really surprised you? Was it easier than you thought it would be, harder than you thought it would be, or just different? Or was it pretty much like, oh, this is just the way it should be?
Oh, it's a really good question. At first, for me to stand up and talk was like, oh my goodness, am I ready for this?
And probably very self-conscious in the beginning.
And it was, because the people that come to hear someone like me talk are ready and they're open and they're looking. So the energy in the audience and the people were just amazing. I think what struck me the most was how really connected, how really energetically and loving we all are with each other. I cannot say that there was any time in the past, what has it been, 14 years that I've spoken, that I haven't walked out of there saying, I love that whole experience. I love the people that I'm with. And there's just a real connection. So you start to get it that we are good, loving human beings at the source. And how do we come together and start living that way so that we can ultimately have that ripple effect, really, to try to change the world. That Gandhi thing, be the change.
Yes,
that's my real big motto of mine.
And from the people that you've studied, I mean, you've studied everything, you know, from very Western traditions to very Eastern traditions. I mean, from Thomas Merton, who was an amazing Catholic mystic who tried to bridge worlds, to, you know, Scott Peck and Tenzin Palmo. I mean, it's really fascinating. And I think it's kind of very representative of what's going on in the world today, that people are waking up to various different traditions and seeing how to bring them together.
Yeah. Well, I think it's what I love about your show and shows like this. Mm-hmm. You are bringing all aspects of people together. You're bringing all of us together. And that's my whole mission, is that there's not really one way.
Right.
There's not really one teacher. There's not one right and wrong way. So I think people resonate with my work and why it was so successful back in the early days was that it's accessible. It's open. It's not rigid. I'm not telling him you have to do this, 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 and this, or, you know, it's not going to work. It's really about, I always say, we cannot escape ourselves even for a second. So we must be so totally connected to ourselves that then we really then can go out into our lives. And so these masters and teachers and the ones living, the ones that have passed away, are all just inspiration for us to get connected to who we are.
Right.
Not connected to them.
Right.
I mean,
I
love all of these people.
Right.
But I'm connected to me, and they inspire me.
Right. They inspire you to form a deeper connection with yourself so that you can inspire others to form a deeper connection with themselves. It's not about, you know, I like to say it's like the time of the guru is over. We are the guru now. Yeah. And it's not to give over our power to someone else, or it's not like things were only accessible through somebody who was already enlightened, as it might have been thousands of years ago. Right. But now everybody can come to it in their own way.
And we need to.
Yes.
That's the whole point.
Mm-hmm. Are there any sort of new up-and-comer teachers that you happen to like a lot?
I have been on a couple retreats here with Gabrielle Bernstein.
Ah, Gabrielle Bernstein. She's actually been in our network. One of our former hosts went to college with her.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I love her energy and her message. I mean, she really is out there being that light that she talks so much about. And my daughter, who works with me with Peace of Mind, Peaceful Life, our nonprofit.
Oh, really?
So she's really been, Gabrielle Bernstein, and some of the really beautiful yogis here, Tara Stiles, love her. Talk about a human being that is so open and wanting you to get connected with your body so that you can really get connected, you know, to your life. And so I think just some of those, and I'm still with James Finley and Tenzin Palmo, still going on the Dalai Lama. You know, I just came back from a retreat with him. So it's like, how do we keep bridging these new and the old and really just start, you know, igniting our own fire and our own light within really is what's important.
So real quick before we go to break, are you an optimist about the future?
I am so optimistic about the future. And I say that because I work with teenagers. I work with autistic adults. I work with moms. Okay. I work with athletes.
Wow.
Every time I'm in a workshop or in a lecture with it is so inspiring and so incredible. I think we just have to have confidence that we are strong enough and good and that we can go out and live our lives and start living that way to start shifting
this universe. And that as much as there may be lots and lots of challenges in the world today, the things really are shifting in a positive direction. It's just, I always have this a discussion with people that, you know, it seems like the world is falling apart and there are all these problems and, you know, we're going to kill ourselves because we're going to kill the bees and that's going to collapse the whole ecosystem. And I'm like, yeah, but there's so much good happening. You know, I also, like you, have confidence that we'll be able to turn anything around to really save ourselves this time. So it's good to know there's more optimists out there. I'm not on my own.
Well, you know, it sometimes things have to fall apart.
Right.
Pema Chodron, that beautiful Buddhist nun, I study with her.
Yes.
You know, when
really?
Things fall apart. That I love her book.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have to fall apart a little bit for us to wake up. And certainly that's what happened for me.
I
checked myself into treatment. That was my wake-up call. We all have to wake up. And I think the universe is calling us in a massive way to wake up.
Absolutely. Absolutely wonderful. Okay. So when we come back from break, I want to talk about the practice. You know, kind of what you see the purpose of your book as being. And I also want to learn more about that nonprofit that you've started. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. My guest this hour is Barb Schmidt, and we will be back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at talkingalternative.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. So, Barb, when did you actually start writing your book, The Practice?
About 2011, 2012.
Okay. How long did it take you to write it?
A couple years.
A couple of years. And so, what was your purpose in writing the book? Like, I know people, you know, you were doing these lectures and things and classes and people wanted a little bit more, but I'm sure there was a specific intention when you started the book.
Well, so about 2010, I was sitting in my meditation practice in the morning, and this voice came up and said, you're going to change the world with peace and meditation and mindfulness.
Oh, wow.
I thought, okay. And so I'd already been doing this work at the universe. I thought, yeah, that makes sense. But I am a true giver. That's just part of my nature. And so nonprofit work has been part of my being since my McDonald's days. I started Ronald McDonald Children's Charities of South Florida. And so I've always had that piece of me.
Okay.
So I thought, you know what? Maybe I start this nonprofit as this outreach component to my university work and my high school work and start this nonprofit, Peaceful Mind, Peaceful Life, because it is my thought that when our mind, when we get a hold of the thoughts in the mind, it's going to translate into a better life for ourselves. So I started the nonprofit first, this Peaceful Mind, Peaceful Life, and started that first. And then as the vehicle, then people kept saying, we need something. You need something to explain how do we have a peaceful mind, a peaceful life, and all of that kind of stuff. So we need something. So as the vehicle to be able to spread the message, really, the book was born.
Okay.
And so I had a publisher in Florida that wanted to publish it, HCI Books. So it's just kind of a natural, it's kind of beautiful what you said at the beginning of the show, how life unfolds and mountains are moved. And certainly I didn't think I'd be sitting here talking about a book way back then, but it's the natural next step.
Yeah. And I love the format of the book because it's like small, it's easy to carry, easy to read. So it's like one of those things, it's portable. You know, I love books, but when they get like the big heavy books, I'm like, you know, it's like, I don't want to carry that on the subway with me, you know?
Yeah, that was my whole intent. How can we use this as a kind of a recipe book for life or a guidebook or, you know, a little partner to help you try to start a practice for yourself and really start stepping into your life.
So now that it's been out a little while, has there been any feedback that you've gotten about the book that really surprised you?
It's always humbling to get the really great feedback that this book has changed my life. You've made it so easy. The fact that you study with all these teachers and that you're able to distill what some of these teachers are saying has really changed my life. So I think that I just spoke with a woman the other day. I did a talk and she said, she came up to me and she said, I just want you to know what I'm doing with your book, what I'm using it for and how you've changed my life and where I've come. So things like that, you know, just like your program, you know, you just hear one thing on a show and it can be just what you needed to hear in that moment to really start, you know, start your life in a different direction.
It's wonderful. It's what I love about you. It's kind of what I'm good at myself. Because when I started off my career out of college, I was doing technical trainings because I had a computer background, but I was good at working with people. So I was always good at explaining very technical stuff in very simple ways.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to sort of some of these esoteric stuff and the spiritual stuff, you know, the original teachers, it's understandable, but not always that accessible to regular people. So having that talent of really getting it and then being able to translate it down to simpler language is something very, very valuable in today's world.
Yeah, which is how you start the show. I think it's why I sat here and I thought, oh my gosh, am I in such a beautiful place? Yeah. It's so important. There's a great, you talked about being a teacher. There's a great quote from Swami Vivekananda from the Sri Ramakrishna Order. And he says, you know, no one can teach you. No one can make you spiritual.
Right.
You need to go inside and become your own teacher. So I really believe strongly that we ultimately end up. And so when I heard that, I thought, yeah, I'm ready to teach. But never giving up the idea that I'm also a student.
Student. Yeah. Right. What do you think is the big challenge for people today in today's world for them to go inside and be their own teacher?
Patience. Sitting with themselves, knowing that it's going to be hard, knowing that it's going to be, and being able to just know you can't escape from yourself.
Right.
So if you're trying to escape yourself, you're going to be, you know, toward the latter part of your life saying, okay, this hasn't worked.
Yeah.
You know, so eventually it's going to catch up with you. You've got to make friends with yourself. You've got to have a relationship with yourself. You've got to be kind to yourself. You've got to nurture yourself. You've got to understand that the relationship with you is the most important relationship in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So I think people are afraid of that. Yeah. I mean, it's hard. It's hard.
And it's interesting because you say nurture yourself. It's a theme that has been coming up over the last year that I'd never heard before. But now with some of the new work that I've been doing, self-care is like so important. And now that like I'm beginning to participate in self-care, I'm beginning to hear so many people, it's starting to like creep into the collective consciousness that, it's like self-care, self-parenting, you know, to give yourself what you never got from other people when you were a kid because they were dealing with their own stuff. Yeah.
And to be so connected to yourself that you know what you need in every moment. So I'm on this tour and I got home last week and my back was bothering me a little bit. And so I thought, I'm going to go to yoga. You know, not to even think twice. Oh, it'll be fine. Oh, it's okay that my back hurts. No, my body was saying, Barb, take care of me.
Right.
You've been running. You've been on planes. Go take care. So I went to a yoga class and I felt great. Yeah. So you really start knowing, what do I need to take care of myself in every moment?
Right.
And it doesn't mean that you're going to go someplace and ignore the rest of your life or the rest of the world. It means that you learn how to, in every moment, get connected and just do in the moment what it is you need to do for yourself or plan it or strategize about it. But really knowing, it's that deep knowing that
And just making it part of your life. And, you know, like one very, very good friend of mine who's kind of a teacher, he said, you know, one time that he goes, you know, I hope the biggest gift I can give my 2-year-old son is that being the example of like knowing how to take care of myself. So he'll see that it's okay for him to take care of his self and get his needs met.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think that it's such a great lesson for the young people in the world. So tell us a little bit more about the nonprofit that you started. What's the mission of the nonprofit?
The mission of it's really to help people live their lives from the inside out, to start to spend time with yourself, start to learn how to get connected with you and outer peace, you know, through inner peace, this idea of, so it's a community, it's a resource, it's a partner, social media.
And who are you trying to serve with this nonprofit?
It's interesting that you say that. Everybody asks that. Who are you? Because you have to try to serve one part to get started.
Right.
And I'm finding it difficult to do that because I want to serve everybody. I go out, somebody says, would you bring a course, you know, teaching autistic adults? I never would have thought that I'd be teaching autistic adults. It's been phenomenal. So I'm actually trying to serve anyone that's interested in learning how to really develop a relationship with yourself to get that inner peace. Then ultimately my greatest mission is for there to be outer peace in the world. I mean, really that idea that we have loving kindness for all, which is a grand, you know, King, Gandhi, Dalai Lama, all those great teachers. But it is my deepest passion that we all find that sense of inner peace. So that's the mission. So it's a resource, quotes and blogs and daily inspirational videos. And, you know, I did my TED Talk a couple of weeks ago. So those kind of things to help you. I'm not saying don't read novels and don't stay engaged in the external world, but find a peace a minute here and a minute there where you can actually read something like your quote.
Right.
It took a minute, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It can be just what you need as you go about your day and still do your ordinary things, but you'll carry that with you.
Right.
It'll come up during the day. Oh, wait a minute. The universe has my back here.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is to really make it an integrated part of your life, that it doesn't have to be something separate like, oh, it's just when I do yoga in the evenings. No, it's a part of your life.
Yeah.
You know, there is no after work and during work time. It's your life. It's how you live your life, how you show up, and looking for those pieces of support are something that we should be doing all the time, not just in the quote unquote off hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's how do we connect to ourselves? We're in the middle of a high stress day.
Yeah.
You know, how do we connect with ourselves when we're at a family reunion and someone's triggering us? How do we connect with ourselves when someone cuts us off on the highway? Right.
Yeah. Completely. Yeah. And we do that by, you know, with the breath or in any of the little tools that I have outlined in the book. But I think one of the greatest things, someone asked me, how did you integrate this finally? Because I was on retreat and then I'd come back. And I think what happens when you start to practice and you start to little by little do that, it just starts to, when you're trying to work on yourself and not trying to change outer conditions, not trying to change other people, it starts to naturally happen that this is my life. And so the way I'm living my life is the way that I live my life. So you're right. Yoga, meditation, mindfulness, all of those things are all, those ordinary moments are the extraordinary moments of our life, really. So it's practice. It really is about practice and trying to work on you and not trying to change others.
And making a decision, right? Making a choice of like, this is important enough to me that I am going to make the time that, you know, I'm not going to just wait until it's convenient, that, you know, I can make it convenient any time of my day.
So well said. Do I want to live this way?
Yeah.
You know, how do I want to live my life? I say a lot that someone asked me and I said, I've become the boss of my own life. You know, too often we give up control mostly to our mind and the thoughts in the mind, but often we give it up to other people instead of really being in charge and knowing this is my one, as Mary Oliver, the American poet said, you know, what are you going to do with your one wild and precious life? This is my one wild and precious life. And are you going to make the decision to be the boss?
Right.
Really?
Exactly.
It's all about that. And then allowing other people to live their own lives, but you really stepping into your own and taking control.
Right. You know, what is it they say that the longest distance we'll ever travel in life are the 3 feet from our mind to our heart?
Totally. That is my favorite. You know, but there's an Eastern Orthodox saying it takes no time to get it into the mind. Uh-huh. But then you're right, to get it from the mind to the heart. Is eternity. Okay. Yeah. The longest distance.
Yeah. Okay, great. Believe it or not, it's time for our last commercial break of the show. See, time really flies when you have such wonderful, fascinating guests. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. Our guest has been Barb Schmidt, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Dude. Transforming Tuesday nights from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on TalkingAlternative.com. It's the Dudes of Disruption.
The Dudes of Disruption is a new show geared toward the global tribe of disruptors who are committed to interrupting the automatic ways of their lives so they go out and leave their mark on the world powerfully.
Consider every Tuesday night, 8 to 9 Eastern on TalkingAlternative.com, forever disrupted. The Dudes of Disruption, disrupting your automatic.
Dude.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
So, Barb, I was wondering if in our last segment, if maybe we can give our audience some like very easy to implement practical tools to help them to have a practice in their life. So how would someone just get started?
The first thing that I say to get started is start easy, start small, start simple. So when I learned how to meditate, I learned how to meditate with the breath. And I've been really great. I've learned many other techniques in the 30 years. But the breath, if you think about it, we already have it. Mm-hmm. We don't have to learn it. We don't have to remember to do it.
Right.
You know, our breath is our life force. It really is going through us. So I say the first tip of the day is to sit in silence with yourself for 1 minute. Just putting your attention on the breath.
Yeah.
Let the thoughts come and go. It's going to be brutal. If you've never done it, it'll be difficult. But just sit there. Just allow yourself give yourself the permission and allow yourself the space to just sit for 1 minute, bringing your attention back to your breath. Let the thoughts come and go. Just to start that connection with that inner life force, with that power. And I say power because when you really get connected to your breath, it is incredibly powerful. So that starts small. And then what happens with the breath, why I love this starting with this 1 minute, then I say throughout the book, I talk about how do we bring that into our day. I'm feeling stressed. So first of all, this prepares me. Right. I'm sitting down, I'm getting prepared because I'm connecting with me before I go into my day.
Right.
Now I'm in my day and life is hectic and chaotic and stressful.
Right.
And so I'm training myself to stop for a minute, 30 seconds, to come back to the breath. So I'm feeling stressful. Go into the bathroom or go someplace and just close your eyes for a minute and just connect back with the breath. This coming into yourself and going out, coming in and going out. So you just do that as you start to become aware that I'm feeling stressed. So what happens is you start to feel your feelings. You start to become aware I'm feeling stressed.
Right.
I'm angry. I'm irritated. I'm sad.
Right.
So you're getting, as you see little by little, you get connected. And it's the process of little by little connecting. And then at the end of the day, using that same technique that you used in the morning, sitting with yourself, television's done, partner, family, whatever is all done, you're done reading, you're ready to go to sleep, close your eyes for a minute, connecting back with your breath, letting everything in the external world go with that intention, the day's over.
Right.
I did the best that I could and it's over.
And I think one of the things is important that you said, it's like, you know, noticing how you're feeling, what you're doing, and not making yourself wrong for how you just happen to be feeling in that moment, because that's how you feel. There's nothing right or wrong about it. It's just how you feel.
Yeah.
And I think we have a tendency to really judge ourselves like, oh, I shouldn't be angry. Oh, I shouldn't be upset. And I think, no, it's like just notice, just noticing and allowing it to be okay, whatever it is, giving it some space.
Well, and that's what meditation is, training yourself to be in the present moment, really.
Yeah.
That's all it is. And so if you pay attention to the breath and you start having this rhythm in your life, so I give myself permission to come in if I'm feeling that something's going on and then I come back out. So you get this rhythm going. And so you start to recognize, you become aware and you start to recognize, wow, I'm feeling guilty. Barb, what's going on? What's happening that you're feeling guilty? So you can kind of see, you can't escape.
Right.
You can't shove these feelings down. You can't get rid of them. You can't pretend they don't exist.
Right.
So meditation, mindfulness, sitting with yourself, connecting with you, you start to get a relationship with yourself. So you start to recognize, we would do this for a friend.
Right.
You know, how are you feeling today? What's going on? You seem like you're a little edgy or whatever. We're doing the same thing for ourselves.
Right.
Okay, how are you feeling? Feeling a little bit sad.
Right.
Oh, you know, what's making you just have a conversation with yourself. So the things come up. That's that's what bypassing the thoughts by focusing your attention on the breath, things come up. So I firm believer that you have to feel your feelings and then work through them. And 90% of working through the feeling is becoming aware.
I see. And this is something that you do with people of all ages, of all situations. We were talking during the break about, you know, your work with autistic adults.
Yeah.
That even just doing something as simple as this with someone who has autism over time can have a tremendous impact.
Huge, because we're giving ourselves space, which is what we don't have today.
Yeah.
We don't have time. We don't have space. We don't have any way of just being.
Well, I'll take a different view on that we do, but what happens is we allow all these other things to impinge upon our space so that we don't feel like we do, because as you said before, we're not really being the boss of our life. You know, like one practice that I do for a while now is, even though I have my phone and I get emails all the time, when it comes to weekends, I'm not sending out any business emails on weekends. Yeah. I'm sorry. I mean, unless it's something really urgent or something that's got to get done before Monday, no, it will wait until Monday. Weekends are like non-work time.
Yeah.
But, you know, these days people are so used to the instant communication. It's like they send you an email. It's like, oh, it's been 5 minutes. He hasn't responded. What happened? You know, and it's just, no, it's like, don't we remember the world before we had cell phones?
Yeah, I know. No, you start to have your own boundaries.
Right.
You start living your life the way you're choosing to live it. And when you do it in such a mindful, soft, gentle, kind way, people appreciate that. And they understand it and they accept it. And you do start to become, you know, the boss of your own life. But you also start to emanate that confidence and courage for other people that, you know, hey, I want to be in charge of my own life. I want to live my life. I don't want to have to use the phone on the weekend if I don't want to. I want to, if I'm not really enthusiastic about saying yes to somebody, I want to be able to say no and feel good about it, not feel guilty or not feel like they're not going to speak to me again. I think it's just learning how to, I always say you have to get connected with you first and then the courage and the confidence and all of that comes.
Right. But before we close, I'm just wondering, do you have maybe one story of somebody who you've worked with that really touched you personally, that really meant a lot to you?
Oh my gosh, there's a lot. Oh my goodness. I have one friend who is a hiker, and she hiked in the Himalayas.
Oh wow!
A couple of years ago, and a storm moved in, and it got really cold, and she got sick, and they got halfway up the mountain, and she said to me, or she said to the Sherpa, she said, I don't think I can make it. I've got to go back. And he said, we can't go back. The storm is moving and we have to go up. And she thought she was going to die. She really didn't think she could make it. And so she said, she told me when she got home, she literally just sat down with herself. She'd been practicing mindfulness. She just sat down with herself and she just connected with the positive mindful thoughts that, you know, I can make this. I am well, connected with her breath and she made it up the mountain. And I say that because what struck me about that is we do think of, scientists say we think 50,000 thoughts a day, with over half of them being negative.
So she's in an extreme
situation thinking, I'm not going to see my family again ever. She turned her whole attitude around instead of being frozen on that mountain and made it to the top. And I think that's the power of sitting with yourself, that you can, just by changing the thoughts in your mind, connecting with your breath, you can get to the mountaintop.
Right. Whatever the mountaintop happens to be.
Exactly.
For you.
You know, yeah. Exactly. Oh, you can make the mountain.
Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful. So if people want to learn more about, let's start with the nonprofit.
Okay.
Where would they go to learn more about that?
Peacefulmindpeacefullife.org.
Peacefulmindpeacefullife.org. Okay,
and it's on Facebook. And we actually have, we have a massive following, about 2.9 million.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's amazing. People are hungry
for
inspiration and for nourishment. So peace of mind, peaceful life. And then my website is barbschmidt.com.
Wonderful. And if they want to get your book, The Practice, where can they find it?
Everywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the local booksellers. And check out the TED Talk. That'll give you some inspiration, this 13-minute little short tips on how to practice
and
your best.
What about, do you have a personal website?
I do, barbschmidt.com.
Barb Schmidt and Schmidt spelled S-C-H-M-I-D-T.
Yes.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah. Well, thank you so much
for
taking time out of your busy schedule to come on the show today. It's been a pleasure to have you here, Barb.
Oh, an honor. Just what I needed today. Beautiful.
Yeah,
thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. So everybody, of course, please stay tuned. Coming up next, your favorite entertainer, Kevin Barbaro, with his show Coffee Talk 3.0, now nationally syndicated, 53 markets around the country. We're very proud of him, and he'll have some more entertaining and wonderful stories for you. And of course, we will be back next week with more great guests for you. Thank you for listening so much, and we will talk to you next week.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you on a path of consciousness or spirit? Is personal or spiritual empowerment important to you? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And I am here to answer your questions and bring you experts in all areas of life to raise your awareness and support you in your evolution. Tune in at my new time, Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern on www.talkradio.nyc. That's Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at TalkingAlternative.com.
Dude. Transforming Tuesday nights from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on TalkingAlternative.com. It's the Dudes of Disruption.
The Dudes of Disruption is a new show geared toward the global tribe of disruptors who are committed to interrupting the automatic ways of their lives so they go out and leave their mark on the world powerfully.
Consider every Tuesday night, 8 to 9 Eastern on TalkingAlternative.com, forever disrupted. The Dudes of Disruption, disrupting your automatic.
Dude.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.